This is the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. This episode is hosted by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Nathan Bryant, and his ministry colleague, Bart Blair.
Welcome to episode 40 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair. I am the Director of Church Revitalization for Assist Church Expansion and one of the hosts of this show. And I have with me today my friend, my ministry colleague, very special guest, Mr. Ed Short. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be with you today, Bart. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation. We've been producing this podcast for, a couple of years now. 40 episodes worth. This is the 40th episode. And our purpose with this podcast is to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. You are not new to the podcast. You have actually been on one episode before, and I'm going to make your head really big here, okay? I don't mean to. You don't really need this, but I'm going to tell you. Episode 15 was the podcast episode that you were on before. So 25 episodes ago, which is a long time ago.
Okay.
That episode was on the topic of helping your church find a new pastor, how to go through that process, what that should look like. That has been the most downloaded episode of this podcast since we started.
That's because my mother, when she was still with us, would look at that every day. So
okay, possibly that's possibly true. I think that it's a genuine felt need for churches. Churches have a difficult time navigating their way towards a new pastor and figuring that out. So I'm going to link to that episode in the show notes here for those of you who might be new to the show. Maybe you weren't around for episode 15. You can go back and listen to some of Ed's wisdom and insights on pastoral search process and what that should look like. Today, we're going to be actually talking about leadership. Leadership is something that with our team at Assist, as we're working churches through a revitalization process, we really try to emphasize the need for effective leadership, not so much management. You know, if you've listened to our show before, you've probably heard Nathan give a differentiation between management and leadership. Management, a good manager tells people what to do, how to do it, when to do it. And in most churches, while some management is required, most people really resist management. Leadership is really casting a vision, guiding, shepherding, and helping people go where they need to go, to move from where they are to where they need to be, to move the church from where it is to where it needs to be. And Ed, you've been coaching pastors and church leaders in this area of leadership for a long time. In fact, you have coined the title Next Level Leader. Your goal, I guess, is to help leaders become next level leaders. So today what we're going to talk about is what a next level leader is, and how a person can become a next level leader. So before we get into the actual content of the next level leadership, why don't you just give a little bit of background on your personal ministry journey? And you and I do get to work with together on the Assist team. That's part of what we do. You also do a lot of other coaching and consulting outside of that. But just give our audience a little bit of background on who you are.
Sure. Let's see. Went to Grace Seminary, got out of Grace Seminary, was a student pastor for a dozen years. So I got to do some amazing stuff. Left there, was an executive pastor for 5 years. And then since then, been a lead pastor of 3 churches, including a church plant. At the end of the day, if you cut me, you'll find a couple of things will be true. I really value evangelism, reaching unchurched people, and really value the discipleship process of helping people, once they do discover who Jesus is, to begin to look like him. Married to an amazing woman, Carol, who's totally unlike me. And she is gifted in ministry, is the best ministry worker I have ever been around. Therefore, she is my most trusted ministry advisor.
Yeah, and it just shows that you are wise because you do allow her to advise you. I've met Carol, spent some time with her, and everything that you say about her is true. Let's get into this topic of next level leadership. Why don't you start by just kind of talking through what a next level leader is, why it's even important that a person think about developing their leadership gifts.
But here's the thing. Those of us that are in ministry realize that we work a lot of time in the ministry. We don't work a lot of time on the ministry, making it better. And we rarely also don't spend a lot of time developing ourselves. And so I don't know if you're a baseball guy. I love baseball. We have a baseball right here on my desk and sometimes play with it while I'm actually doing Zoom calls. But I won't do that today. But if you're a baseball guy, then you know what a 5-tool baseball player is. He's good at 5 things. And not just good, but he's great at these things. Think Willie Mays of old. Think Mike Trout of the Angels today. He's really good at hitting for average, hitting for power, has speed on the bases, has a great fielding glove, and can throw the ball really well. Okay. He is a five-tool baseball player. Next level leaders, what I'm really thinking about is how do we take you on that 1 to 10 scale? If you're a 4, how do we help you become a 5? If you're a 6, how do we help you become a 7? It's the next level up. Like nobody goes from being a 4 to a 9. And if you think you're a 9.5, well, you're probably deceived. You're probably not really a 9.5, right? So it's the idea of developing them. And then I sat down and came up with a list of things that are attributes, qualities, abilities, mindsets that I think a next level leader ought to have.
Okay. Well, let's go through some of those attributes. You shared this with our team last year. And although I've known that you've been coaching pastors and leaders for a long time, and I've seen some of the guys, I know some of the guys that you coach, and I see that your coaching has been very effective. I really wasn't familiar with the content of what you're actually doing and how you're helping them. And then you kind of shared this this sheet with me. I've got it right here in front of me. I've kept it. It's wrinkly and kind of, you know, squishy because it's been moved around on my desk a million times, but I've kept it close because I thought it was really, really powerful, really strong stuff. Let's talk about the attributes of a next level leader. What are some of those things that you've identified that a next level leader ought to be or ought to have?
Okay. So before I give you those, let me just challenge those that are listening to think about this. I'm going to go through a list. You're going to think it's really, really long, and it is. However, what I'd really like you to think about is what are the 3 things that are talked about today that you could really capitalize on? 3 things you're really, really good at. Let's spend a lot of time capitalizing on those things. Then what are 2 or 3 things you go, whoa, I'm not bringing hardly anything to the table in that. How do I neutralize those things? So 3 things you could capitalize on, 2 things that you could neutralize. I'm just going to dive in. You and I can interact. You can clarify anything that I'm about to say. All right. So first one is actually probably my weakest point. And it's that a next level leader is absolutely God dependent, which sounds really bad that I'm saying that's my weakest point. But honestly, Bart, I would rather plan than pray. That's not good. All right. And so one of my desires, hopefully, if you're watching this podcast, one of your desires is that you want to have a ministry that when people look at it, they go, it must be God. It must be God. So prayer, God dependence, super, super important. Second thing that made my list is a radically obedient spirit. I don't know about you, Bart. I like running my own life. And God says, that's not going to work for you. So you need to be radically obedient to me, which means that I need to learn not just to pray and verbalize to God, but I've got to really listen to him. The Holy Spirit wants to tap me and you on the shoulder and tell us you ought to do this and you shouldn't do that. Third thing that made the list is somebody that really models Christ's priorities. Somebody that says, you know what, I am going to really pursue God to get to know him. I'm going to really seek to allow him to change my life. If you want a spiritually sounding word, sanctification would fit into that. I'm really going to serve others. I'm going to seek lost people. I'm going to learn to really rely upon God. I'm going to allow him to change me. Too often as a pastor, I'm thinking about helping other people understand Jesus, follow him, and experience change. I also need to have that as a key quality that is in my life. Next item on the list is you have to be passion driven. If you're not passionate about doing ministry, then you should go work at Lowe's and make paint. Because some days I think that's my dream job because it's an 8-to-5 job. You don't think about paint when you go back home. But I think I'd be bored to death after 2 weeks of doing that. What's your passion? Really, a lot of people have said, hey, if you can do anything else, you probably should do that. I'd say that's probably the wrong issue. Maybe if you don't have passion, you want to ask God to really stir your heart. Because if you don't have passion, you will quit, or at least feel like quitting, or you'll coast. And actually, coasting would be worse than quitting. So you need passion. Passion's really the gasoline that drives the ministry forward. The next thing that a next level leader understands is he understands where his church has been in the past. You got to understand what happened before you got to town. What was the last guy like? Because typically there's this pendulum. And if they really like the guy, they're going to hire somebody like him, part 2. And if they really didn't, they're going to hire the opposite of him. That's what churches tend to do. So to understand what have been the victories, what have been the failures, what does the staff look like in the past, what have you been known for, to understand the church's past, really, really important. And the next one is assessment. I would argue that assessment is as important as vision. If you'd hang out with me, you'd begin to understand this guy loves vision, and I do. But what I've realized is that if you don't assess where the ministry is currently at, you're going to have a real hard time implementing vision. And so assessment, an honest, real gut check look at how your ministry is going. What's effective, what's not, assessment. Which takes me to the next one, which is a good quality and a bad quality. It's a sense of having a sense of holy discontentment. I self-professed probably the most discontented person I know. Not in regards to my wife, my house, my kids, my bank account. I don't really care about those things. I do care about those things, but I'm not obsessed with those things. But I really want the ministry to keep taking another step. I want the guys that I get a chance to coach and consult with, I want them to figure out what's their next step, and then let's figure out how to get there. Sense of holy discontentment, like let's keep pushing the envelope. Next one is a biblical strategic thinker. What are the drivers that really have to happen in a ministry for it to go? Things that I would rattle off are things like you got to really reach lost people. You got to teach and preach really, really well. You got to help people to connect with each other. That probably is through a life group system. You got to coach people up to do life on life ministry. You got to develop leaders around you. You've got to really be God dependent. And those things will help you then to determine what you do and what you don't do. The next thing that made my list is you got to be able to set a clear God-dependent vision. A clear God-dependent vision. What's the dream? Every church that I'm aware of should have the same mission. Say it any way you want. You're going to come a better idea than this, but it's really to make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. You're going to say that in a better way. You're going to put it on your website, and unchurched people are going to go, okay, I understand what that means. So all of us need to have the same mission, but the vision is how you're going to flesh that out. And you've got to have a picture of what that thing looks like. And then you assess that picture compared to where you are today, which will help you to understand the steps that you ought to take next. So assessment, biblical thinking, a strategy, coming up with a vision, and then goal setting. You've got to be a person that sets goals. Now, I don't know about you, Bart, but most of the goals that I see churches set are pretty much a waste of time, because here's what happens. They'll set goals the beginning of the year, whether the beginning of the year is September or January, and they'll set these lofty goals, and then they won't look at them again until December or August and go, yeah, we didn't do that, which is why I would encourage you to think about two types of goals, faith goals, goals that are way beyond us, goals that are God-dependent. We say things like, we'd like to see 25 people come to know Jesus and become a part of our ministry in this year. That's a great goal. But if that's the only step to the goal, you're never going to hit that goal. So for every faith goal, big picture, God-dependent goal, you've got to have corresponding work goals beneath that. So if I want to see 25 people come to know Jesus, I've got to create a culture, work goal number one, that lost people, unchurched people, are really valued. I've got to coach people up. I've got to help people identify three unchurched people that they're going to invest their lives in, and the list goes on and on. It's a balance of setting goals that are faith goals, God-dependent, and then asking, what's our part in that? Those are work goals, okay? Another thing that an next level leader is, he's an implementer. We live in a culture that a lot of us as pastors, we really like to take time to think. And we process and we process and we process and we process. But when you think, you have to then decide, which enables you then to do. So implementers think about it, pull the trigger, because they've made a decision, and then take action on the decisions that they've made. Think, decide, do. Amazingly, I have not had one class in my Bible college time or my seminary time that somebody actually taught me how to do that. Implementation seemed like, yeah, that's something they do in the real world. We don't need to do that here. I think we really do need to do that. The next thing that made my list is a next level leader is a team builder. And I have recognized, I think it's correct, there are basically three kinds of people. There's workers, there's managers, and there's leaders, okay? All three are really, really needed. A worker is somebody who says, hey, give me one thing to do and I will go do that. I mentioned my wife, Carol, she's a worker. Sometimes we think, well, a worker, they're low on the scale. Oh no, not at all. No, workers are the worker bees of the church, right? We got to give them something to do, challenge them to do something, let them go do it. Maybe it has to do with a task. Maybe it has to do with people. Let's loose them to go do that. But if you put those individuals on a task force or a leadership team, they're probably going to drown. A manager is somebody who oversees systems and or people. They like to function and think about today. I think they're really, really needed. Also, leaders then, what are leaders? Leaders that are always thinking about tomorrow. They're thinking about the vision. The difficulty is when you have managers and leaders on the same team, they frustrate each other. Because the leader's going, let's go tomorrow. And the manager's going, whoa, hold the phone. If we keep doing that, this system is going to crash. I'm arguing both are really needed. And we, as pastors and leaders in churches, we need to recognize we need both. They're both really, really important. So you got to build a team. Makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the ministry will only go as high as you're able to take it. You need to develop people around you. The next one is an interesting one. It's a bit lengthy. I'll try to articulate it for you. It's really the idea of valuing unchurched people. And I think most of us would say that we do. But it's valuing unchurched people to the point that I prioritize my time to reach them. Most pastors, sadly, do not prioritize their lives to reach people. I recently read through somebody's questionnaire because I work with a lot of churches trying to help them find pastors. And one of the questions was, you know, tell me about evangelism. And the guy said, well, the last time I shared the gospel was when I preached. And I'm thinking, well, that's good. That's not what I'm talking about. Now, you ought to share the gospel from time to time when you're preaching. That just makes sense. But I'm talking about passionately wanting to reach your neighbors and being able to identify with them, that you prioritize your life to reach them. Because every church I've worked in, Bart, we had a policy that anybody on our staff, they had to already know Jesus. So I don't have the opportunity to work with unchurched people. I have to go where they are, okay? Really important. Valuing lost unchurched people. I think as pastors, we need to ring that bell over and over and over again. Along with that is, I think, a next level leader sees evangelism as a process, not just a one-time thing. It's going to take time. It's a process. It's adding a link to the chain. It's caring for unchurched people that you can name names. It's beginning to weave Bible ideas into the conversation, perhaps without even saying it's a Bible idea. And then it's challenging them ultimately to take a step to begin to follow after Jesus. So the question is, when you talk about lost people being reached by the church, most churches that are out there that would be in our camp really are not very effective at helping their people to do that. And I think that's because we've missed that whole Ephesians 4 principle of equipping the saints to do the work of the ministry. Equipping, interesting word, it really is the idea of coaching them up, helping them to do real ministry out there. Because honestly, my dream is that 90% of our ministry as a church doesn't happen in our building. It happens out there where we do real life. In order to do that, as a pastor, you have a privilege and a responsibility to coach people so they understand how to do life-on-life ministry. I think it's the missing piece in most of our churches. Because if you don't do that, the only way your church is going to grow is based upon the ability of the guy up front to communicate and probably the worship team to attract and keep people there. It doesn't make disciples who make disciples. We've got to coach them up to do that. The next one is that a next level leader is a really amazing communicator of God's truth and principles and stresses application. I said this numerous times now, and it sounds like I'm heretical. Pretty sure I'm not. the Bible does not change your life. Choosing to live by the Bible changes your life. And we've got to communicate biblical principles in a way that people walk away understanding what the principle is. And I think one of the things as pastors that, unfortunately, I've never been taught how to do was to close really well. Like if I were a car salesman, Bart, and you pulled in the lot, you looked at a car, I showed it to you, I gave you all the info about the thing, I had you do a test drive, and when you pulled back in the lot, I said, hey, thanks for coming by. I'd be a terrible car salesman, right? Well, we're not selling cars as pastors, but you have the opportunity to present principles, truths from God's word, and we have to help people wrap those things up and make a decision about those things. We have to do it today. And so the close of the sermon, I think, is the most important part. And we've got to slow down and get people to pray through stuff and actually respond to God while it's in their minds. Because let's face it, by 1 o'clock this afternoon, they're not going to remember most of what I said. And so to be able to communicate effectively, I think is really important. I just spoke with a pastor, a friend of mine who I'm coaching, who asked me, hey, who could I watch, you know, so I could learn how they, why and how they do stuff. And I gave them some names, but then said this. I think what you really ought to do is you ought to watch some clean comedians, because comedians know how to address the crowd. They know how to use their voice. They know how to pause. They know how to do a whole lot of stuff that I was never taught how to do when I was in those fine institutions that I went to. So we've got to become great communicators. You got to have really good content. That happens in your office. But then you got to work hard at the art of presenting the truth to people so that it will stick with them. Somebody that wants to take another step, that's something that's really important to do. A next level leader strives for excellence, which depending on your church, excellence could be here, here, or here. So my definition of excellence is doing the best that I can with the time, resources, and people that I have. If you have a church of 25, your level of excellence is here. If you have a church of 150, your level of excellence is here. If you got a church of 5,000, your level of excellence is here. You got to do the best you can with the time and resources and people that you have, but you got to set the bar. And then we go after the bar and realize that year one, the bar might be here. Year two, the bar is going to be here. Year three, the bar is going to be here. So we've really got to strive for excellence. Another component that's really important for a person who wants to improve is, how do I use my time wisely? What do I spend my time on? I'm a list person. Bart, I think you're a list person. I love lists. As a matter of fact, some days I just want to write down on the list three things I've already done, just so I can have the joy of scratching out. You know, it's just like, but the list keeps me focused, right? And then I'm thinking, okay, here's my list. There's 18 things on the list. I'm going to prioritize the six of those. I'm going to try to knock off today. And I'm going to put a number beside that that says a half an hour, hour and a half, 3 hours, 15 minutes, just so that I can stay focused and go, what's really important today that I get done? So figuring out how to use your time wisely, really, really important. Next thing a next level leader does is they plan to grow themselves. They have a plan. They listen to podcasts. They read books. They most likely have a coach. And if you don't have a coach, you need a coach. Every one of us, Bart, me, you, we need coaches. We all have what I would call a junior high boy syndrome. We don't know what we don't know. We can't smell our own stink. Go to a retreat with junior high boys, and by the end of the week, you're going, you smell bad, but he doesn't know it. Certain areas of ministry and life, I apparently smell bad. I need somebody I allow to come into my life that can help me to understand that and then coach me through that. Get coached, develop a plan. It's really, really important. The last thing that I'll share is every one of us, if you want to be a next level leader, you need to have a high degree of discipline. A high degree of discipline. You've got to be able to say no. I'm a chaser. So I want to chase after people that might not want to be caught. I want to tackle them, drag them back in. And I've had to learn that there are certainly times to chase people, but if you're doing too much of that, it's over the top. I need to be disciplined to make sure I get through the day and do what I really need to do. Because if I get emotionally tired, you know what I want to do? I want to get in the office. I want to check out the sports page. Rather than cranking it up, rather than spending time with God, rather than getting his word, rather than working on a strategic plan. And I need to be disciplined to make sure that I'm taking the next right steps. If I were looking to hire somebody on my team, I would look at their abilities. I would look at their passion. I would look at their discipline. Three vitally important things. So that's what a next level leader really looks like. So again, here's what I challenge you to do. I challenge you to think about that list and say, what are the three things that he mentioned that I'm really good at? Figure out how to capitalize on that. And then what are two or three things that are glaring weaknesses? I know we don't like to use the word weaknesses, so lack of strength. How do I neutralize them? Because notice these hands, no holes, not Jesus. We're never going to bring all of those things to the table. However, some of those things, if you're a two, you're going to hurt your ministry. You've got to neutralize that thing. And some of those things, you might be an eight, maybe even a nine. Capitalize on those things. Walk the path. Trust God. I think you're going to see God do some amazing stuff.
Now, for those of you who are frantically trying to take notes, this will all be in the show notes of the podcast episode. Hopefully you weren't like riding lawnmower and trying to write this down or driving down the highway. So we'll have this list as well as some additional resources in the show notes. There's one thing you left off the list that I'm going to tell you needs to be on your list, Ed. And that is, in order to be a next level leader, you have to have a pretty high level of self-awareness.
That's right.
Because you have to be able to look at this list and be honest with yourself about where you are on these things. There are a couple of them here that I want to kind of double click on a little bit. We don't have time to get into all of them, but I think you've got to start by just being honest with yourself and having a high level of self-awareness. And if you look at this list and you're completely unsure, you should probably sit down with someone who knows you really well and ask them to rate you. If you can't rate yourself, ask someone else to rate you. It's not for any other reason other than to say, hey, I want to be the best that I can be. I want to fulfill all the potential that God has put in me. And, you know, you and I, we're not spring chickens. We've been doing this. We've been in leadership. I was in corporate leadership before I went into ministry leadership, and we've been in it a long time. We've paid the dumb tax on things that we've needed
absolutely
to learn along the way. I've had a lot of people speak into my life and help me where I'm not as self-aware. You know, sometimes you look in the mirror and you don't see everything that you need to see. So sometimes it does take having somebody who knows you well to speak into these things. I'm going to go all the way back to the very first point, and it's only fresh in my mind because I've been coaching a couple of churches through this actual point, and that is being God-dependent, having a God-dependent spirit. And you know, you and I think we've talked about this before. My natural posture is not to stop and pray when there's a problem or an issue or a task that needs to be done. My natural inclination is to kick into Bart solve it mode. And I preach this, and I've been coaching this, and I've actually created a resource to help churches with this shameless plug. I'll get to that in just a second. But if you want to know if you have a God-dependent spirit, the first thing you need to look at is your own prayer life. The priority of your prayer life actually is a really good barometer for how God-dependent you are. If you spend lots of time in prayer over your life, your ministry, your family, the things that are important to you, it's a pretty good indicator that you realize that without God in it, it's probably not going to go the way that you want it to go. If you don't spend time in prayer, praying for those things, it's a pretty good indication that you feel like you have everything all under control and that you don't need God's participation in those things. So that's kind of that first gut check. You know, if you're not sure how God-dependent you are, the best place to start is your own prayer life. I created a resource, predates this podcast by a little while. It's called Praying for Renewal in Our Church. And I've been really blessed to have feedback from lots of churches that have utilized this resource to guide their church through a season of transition. Because basically what we're doing is we're encouraging the whole church body to come back to God and say, this church belongs to you. It doesn't belong to us. So let's dependently pray to God that he will bring the renewal and the new vision and the new direction that we need. So I'll link to that in the show notes. And if you're listening to the podcast or watching this on YouTube and you have more questions about that resource and how to utilize it, you can always reach out to me and I'll be happy to give you some more insight and input into how you can use that. And another one of the things that I wanted to double click on here, Ed, is being a goal setter. Why don't you just, I've got some thoughts I want to share, but I want to hear a little bit more about how you would coach someone on being an effective goal setter, both for their personal ministry as well as their church ministry.
Okay. So as far as their personal ministry, I would help them to narrow the focus and come up with two people who are Christ followers that I'm going to try to influence, three people that are unchurched persons, and then one ministry partner. And I'm going to set some life-on-life ministry goals for them. And it could be as simple as, hey, want to get with Jack next Wednesday and encourage him to do better with his finances and have that conversation with him. In regards to church-wide stuff and goal setting, I think we have to go back to the big picture vision components that have to be up and running effectively for the church to be good. So I'm going to think through the reaching area. How effective are we? What goals do we need to set? Faith goals, work goals. I'm going to think through preaching. What needs to be preached? I'm going to be thinking through the connection point of life groups. Like what percentage of our people are actively in life groups? How good are our life groups? Just because you're showing up doesn't mean that it's a true life group. A lot of times it's Sunday school class in a house, and that's not really going to pull it off. One of the areas that I think most churches don't set goals in is really the area of developing other leaders. And, you know, I'm going to think through, like, what could that look like? Do I have an on-ramp? Who in my ministry potentially is a manager or a leader that if I invested in them, they could pop? So I'm going to wrestle through those vision components, come up with some practical, very simple, doable, not lofty, but in essence, work goal pieces that I'll be able to do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Okay. That's helpful. That's very, very tangible. When I'm working with churches, church leaders on setting goals, I use this terminology. I'm sure that you're familiar with it, Ed, and maybe some of our audience is as well. And that is lead measures versus lag measures. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what I find is that when churches set goals, they're setting goals that are lag measures versus lead measures. And let me break that down. Let's say, for instance, we decide we want to have 15 people baptized this year. Great. It's a wonderful goal. No one's going to criticize a goal of seeing more people get baptized.
Right.
The question that I'm going to ask you is, okay, so what are the things that you're going to do that control whether or not 15 people get baptized? Most of the time it's, well, we're just going to, by faith, expect that God will bring us 15 people to be baptized. And by faith, God can do that. Sure. But I would say that as far as it depends on you, perhaps there are some things that you could do that we would consider to be lead measures that feed that potential lag measure. So for instance, do you have a baptism study that you do? Maybe, let's say you had 10 people get baptized last year and the goal is 15 people this year. How many times did you offer the baptism study last year? Maybe you need to increase the frequency with which you offer the baptism study. How many times did you preach on baptism and the role that it plays in our relationship with Jesus and the biblical and historical reason for baptism? Did you preach on that? Is there a component of baptism built into your discipleship pathway or your membership strategy, right? So if you want more people to get baptized, I don't think it's enough just to write a number down on the paper and simply pray that the Lord will bless you with 15 baptisms. I think that there are some tangible things that you need to look at and go, to the degree that it depends on me, these are the things that I can do, lead measures, things that I can decide how often I'm going to offer the baptism study. And I can put that on the calendar and then I can execute on that. And I can believe that if I offer the baptism study 5 times this year instead of 3 times this year, like I did last year, then perhaps I'll have a few more people attend that baptism study and take the step of faith in baptism. Any comments or thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great picture of that faith goal idea with work goals. The work goals, things that they're not sexy, But there are the things that we have to do. You have to, if you want to see people come to know Jesus and get dipped in the pool, then you've got to do certain things. And the reason most faithfuls aren't hit is because we don't come behind with the steps. We need to have steps. The steps, not sexy, but they're the things that cause the bell to ring.
I'm going to use another example there, because this is one I think that for a lot of our churches, this would, those that are going through a season of revitalization or renewal, they will relate to this. I've been in very few churches. And of course, from a staff perspective, I've always been in church plans. So I've never been in a church that's been going through a renewal season. But I would say that in our church plants, every year we'd look at our budget and we would expect our budget to improve or increase year over year. Now, the question is, and a lot of the churches that you and I are coaching through revitalization have not seen an increase in their budget for a long time. In fact, most of them have probably seen a decrease in their budget. But I would even go so far as to say a lot of the churches that I've worked with that have set goals to see their budget increase, I ask, so how are you expecting that to happen? Well, we're expecting more people to start attending the church. Okay, well, how do you expect that to happen?
Yes.
You know, and you expect those people to just naturally be givers? Oh, but what if you're actually reaching lost people who are actually coming to faith in Jesus? Are they just going to naturally know to give, that that's something that they're supposed to do? And this is all just naturally going to lead to an increased budget. So ask yourself the question, what are the things that I can actually do, the work goals? What are the lead measures that I can implement in the church that might improve our giving this year? Yes, having more people attend your church is a great step. But if we're reaching people who are far from God, number one, we need to lead them to faith in Jesus. And then somewhere along the way in our discipleship pathway, we probably need to introduce the concept of generosity to them and help them understand how that plays out in the church. Perhaps you might need to preach a sermon series on giving and generosity and stewardship. Perhaps you need to offer Financial Peace University so that you can help some of the families and the people in your church that are financially strapped get out of debt, so that they can reprioritize the way that they're utilizing the resources that God has given them. There are things that you can do, which may not, that you may not be able to draw a direct line to it and go, well, because we did that, this is the ultimate outcome. But you can certainly say, hey, if we hadn't done that, if we didn't do those things, then we're certainly not giving ourselves any shot. It's just a hope and a prayer that we'll see the budget go up without any real tangible work connected to it. So that's just a couple of thoughts there.
That's 100% gold, Bart, because the missing piece, I think, is we don't take the time to think through what are the steps. And one of the major steps in generosity and evangelism and connection is we've got to create cultures. And it's always going to be easier to create a program than a culture. Culture takes a long time to develop, but you have to be intentional about creating a culture, the culture of generosity. The culture of lost people really matter to God. The culture of we really need each other as Christ followers. Got to work really hard on that. And there's no pixie dust. You got to have the right steps to move that thing forward.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I'm going to hit on one more thing here, because I'm just going to be honest with you. As you went through this list, there's one thing that stands out to me that as I look across the landscape of many of the pastors that I coach, it is probably the most glaring deficiency in their leadership. And that is being an implementer, someone who can actually sit down, make a plan, and then put a plan into action. Now, you and I, this is a source of frustration for both of us, because we are getter done kind of people, right? We are practitioners in what we like to do. I don't like to just map it out on paper and then let it sit on paper. I want to actually put a plan in action. My greatest ministry frustrations have always been working with people who talk a big game, but don't actually do anything with what they're talking about. Why don't you just double click a little bit on that concept or that idea of being an implementer? How do you help someone who's not naturally an implementer get to a place where they can actually implement?
I just 2 days ago met with a pastor who said, you know, I'm really good at coming up with the picture of where we are and where we need to go. I have no idea as to what are the steps to take. Hmm. And so I began to work through how you do that and realized that I was asking him to write with his left hand. Mm-hmm. And so I had to help him see the possible steps. And when he saw the steps, then he could go, oh, press play. That's what I need to do. Now, that still doesn't get it done, but at least that helped him. He identified it and went, yes, that's right, but I don't think that way. You and I could try to develop people who are amazing at implementing, and we're going to be super frustrated. So just maybe the key to that is finding somebody on your team who's really good and naturally thinks implementation. And if that's not you, they could help you think through what are the possible steps to do that. I don't have one magic book that you could read and all of a sudden be an amazingly great implementer.
Well, I would say, again, going back to the whole self-awareness piece, if you're a person who has the level of self-awareness that this person that you were coaching recently had, where you say, look, I can put a plan on paper, I just can't figure out how to mobilize people to make it happen. That just having that level of self-awareness to be able to look around the room and go, who do I know that can do this? Who do I know is a get it done kind of person? In my last church that I pastored, you know, I was a visionary leader. I was pretty strong at coming up with ideas and concepts and things that would work well. And I consider myself actually to be a pretty good implementer. But I had this gal on my team. She was part-time, worked with me, helped lead our children's ministry, and then also did a lot of stuff with our outreach. She was gold when it came to taking this big picture idea. She would come to me with ideas and just kind of share the concept with me. And I'm like, I have no idea what this is going to look like, but I'm just going to trust you and empower you. And then I would show up to this event or this activity that she put together. And I was like, oh my gosh, she didn't leave any stones unturned. She dealt with all the details and had all the people in place. She was just really, really good at that. And I was very blessed to have someone like that on my team. And you, Pastor, that are listening to this or watching this, you might actually have that person on your team. You just haven't been looking out for it. So it is a great gift to be looking for. And when it comes to equipping the saints for the work of ministry, sometimes empowering people to work in those areas of their strength is really all you need to do. But you need to be able to spend the time with them and recognize what their strengths are so that you can deploy them for that service.
Yeah. Let me recommend a book. It's really old. So if you're interested in the book, you're probably going to have to buy a used copy on eBay or something like that. It's called The E-Myth, M-Y-T-H, Revisited.
Yep.
The E-Myth Revisited.
It is actually, I think that's where the lead measures, lag measures things come from.
Okay.
I think that's where they come from. And it is available on Amazon, at least in Kindle, like digital format.
Michael Gerber is the author. It's an easy read, 150 pages. It's about a woman who works in a pie baking company. She's the best pie baker they have. And she decides to leave that and start her own company. And then she realizes that, my words, not his, there are workers, managers, and leaders. And you got to understand who you are. And then you put around you people that bring what you don't bring to the table. So understanding who you are, I think that's going to be the key.
That's awesome. Thank you, Ed. We've come to the end of our time together today. This has been a great conversation. I've been encouraged by it. I hope that our audience has as well. Again, you can check the show notes on our website, revitalizemy.church. Go to the podcast page, find episode 40, and you'll find all the goods from this particular episode there. Ed, thanks again for hanging out with us today. For those of you who might be new to the show and you haven't yet subscribed, make sure that you do that wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We release an episode on the first of the month and the 15th of the month, which is kind of an awkward schedule. It works really well for us, but it might make it difficult for you to remember when podcast episodes get released. So if you subscribe, every episode will be delivered to your mobile device so you don't miss one. And if you know anybody who might find this content to be helpful, please be sure to share this episode. We'll put Ed's contact information in the episode as well. So if you have any specific questions about any of these areas, you can follow up with him. So on behalf of Ed Short, I'm Bart Blair, and this has been the Revitalize My Church podcast.